Hey, everybody, I'm Fran Freshella, and welcome to World of Basketball. This is the podcast that takes you around the basketball globe. We bring you interesting guests, players, coaches, team executives who have a connection to every part of basketball's shrinking globe. Today, we have a very special guest, a friend of mine, former NBA player, 15 years, grew up on the island of Haiti. Emigrated to New York City, where he was an outstanding star, University of Virginia, and then off to the NBA. My guest is Olden Polonese, and you'll hear some great stuff today from Olden. He's been a Forrest Gump of basketball, really, traded on draft night for Scottie Pippen, once caught an elbow in college from Hakeem Olajuwon, and played for the LA Clippers, Seattle Sonics. You'll hear some great stuff from Olden. He's very active right now in areas like people with disabilities, social justice. So it was really great to catch up with him. We're coming to you the day after the NBA draft. And what has been very common in the last 10 to 15 years is the rise of international players in the NBA draft and, of course, in the NBA. Last night was no exception. Denny Avdija was drafted early by the Washington Wizards. Killian Hayes, the French point guard, went to the Detroit Pistons, right up and down the line. A couple of American players who played in Australia last year, RJ Hampton and LaMelo Ball, heard their names mentioned. Alexei Pokuševski, the international mystery man, 7 foot Serbian youngster who was only 18 years old and the youngest player in the draft. He was taken by the Oklahoma City Thunder. So very interesting draft night. Chris Tyler, my co-host, but nothing unexpected really to me, especially as it relates to, the kids that are born outside the United States.
Yeah, although I did think it was good that Josh Green went pick 18 to the Mavs. That's going to be a lot of fun. I probably wasn't expecting him to go so high, but he was going to be around there anyway. He was probably going to go around the 15 to 30 mark, so it was good to see him go on the higher end of that. But it's exciting. Anytime an Australian gets drafted, it's great. And as you said, LaMelo Ball, 3 to the Hornets. Hopefully he can be my neighbor next year if I end up moving there. Fingers crossed, we'll see how we go. And then RJ Hampton, 24 to Denver. So a couple of good ones there. And we should also mention as well, Justinian Jessup, who played for the Illawarra Hawks last year, got drafted to pick 51 to the Warriors.
You're getting all the Australian down under connections in, as you can tell, my co-host.
Yeah, got to do it. I'm contractually obligated to do that.
Yeah. Well, that certainly has been a big night. Nico Mannion went to the Golden State Warriors, the young man who is really American, but born in Italy because his mom is Italian, but he is
World of Basketball's own Nico Mannion.
That's
we had
right.
him on the show a couple of months ago. So make sure if you haven't listened to that episode, check it out. He's a great kid.
Well, thank you for reminding me that if you're enjoying World of Basketball, please subscribe, give us a review. The more people we have listening, the more we can continue to bring you these shows. So it was a fun night. These guys don't have much adjustment because within 2 weeks they're going to be in NBA training camps. No summer league, no off-season workouts with future teammates. They have to jump right into the fire, get their contract signed, and move quickly to those cities. So we're going to follow those young people closely. A lot of kids also who played college basketball who were born outside the United States, like Doka Azubuike, Precious Achiuwa, two Nigerian youngsters. By the way, the Nigerian representation in this draft, Chris, was phenomenal, you know, and kudos to my friend Amadou Fall, who runs NBA Africa. Whether these kids were born outside the United States or were the children of immigrants, like Onyeka Okongwu, Daniel Oturo, Isaac Okoro, Desmond Bain has Nigerian roots as well. It was a great night for the continent of Africa and particularly for the country of Nigeria. And by the way, Nigerian kids, a few I've coached, are tough, hard-nosed guys. Their families are blue-collar people, those that immigrate to the United States. They have great work ethics, very intelligent folks, and they made their impact known. Zeke Najali, I also believe, is another Nigerian, a youngster taken by Denver. So with that, let's get on to our terrific conversation with former NBA player Olden Polonese. Olden, first of all, I got to thank you because it's got to be the middle of the night in Maui, right? What time is it right now?
It is 5:30.
Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
It's
thank
fine.
You. Oh, well, hey, it's
it off air. Anything for you, coach.
thank you, man. It's a pleasure having you on. You have such a unique story, and we're going to get into it because, let's start here. And then we'll get into your background and what you've accomplished and how you've helped people. But this is a big week for young people who are in the NBA draft.
Yes.
And you spent a long career in the league. 15 years is a long time, Olden, and you had to be doing something right. It wasn't just your talent and the fact that, you were an outstanding player. If you were giving advice to a rookie, a guy that's going to get drafted this week, and forget the basketball itself, the talent will take care of itself. What advice would you give that young man in order for him to have a productive NBA career?
Business, business, business. You have to look at it as a business. You can't come in there trying to be, oh, well, they like me. And it's nothing personal. You don't take any of this personally. You know, my draft night, I got traded, so it already started as business. So for me, that was like my early learning curve. But as you get into it, you're going to have teammates that are going to come and go. And so you try to cultivate those relationships, but at the same time, you still got to remember it's business. And I like to tell the story. The one veteran that I got that really helped me was Clemon Johnson. And I was coming, young man, trying to take his spot. And he said plain and simple to me, hey, man, I've had my career. You know, I'm at the tail end of it. And I'm hoping and praying that you have a long career as well. And that stood out to me so much. And I think that's what's missing today for a lot of young players is having veteran leadership, that veteran guy that could take them under his wing. Because now veterans are 21, 22, you know.
Oh, this is exactly where I want to go with you because I got to think that a lot of where a young man is going to be drafted this week, his success is, and oftentimes, Olden, you were a high pick, that, and then maybe not in your case because you got traded. We will get into that. One of the famous trades in NBA history, by the way. We will get into that. But I got to think that this week, sometimes where a young man gets drafted and his success in the league will be a product of where he goes and what that culture is, whether it's with the coaching staff, the front office, or the veteran players that take him by the, by the hand, if you will. Can you speak to that?
Oh, definitely. Well, that's a very good point because it's all based on where you go. You are absolutely right. Some teams have general managers that are all about players, and some teams as that are all about the company or the corporation or the team, and that's it. And they don't care about nothing else. So, and some young guys, you know, they might come from single family homes, you know, just the mom or just the dad, or some have both parents. We don't know that. But again, it's still business. And you have to come into it with that mindset, hey, I got drafted to do a job. And that's pretty much it. Now, if you're lucky enough, I was lucky enough to get to Seattle first, and I had all those that helped me. But my growth didn't really come or come into effect until I got to the Clippers, after I got traded from Seattle. And then really blossomed in Sacramento. So it's a step. It's a process. We're not all going to be LeBron James. And I think that's what young people need to understand. You're not LeBron James, you're not all going to be Steph Curry and all that. But, you got to be truthful with yourself and figure out, where do I fit in? Where's my niche? And I lasted 15 years because I knew what my niche was. I'm going to rebound. I'm going to play defense. I'm going to be that tough guy that you need. I'm not going to back my teammate. I'm hitting you.
It's funny you said that because if you disagree with this, tell me. But I often tell young people, these young college guys, there's 25 stars or superstars in the NBA, and there's 425 role players. And role players get paid well, by the way.
That's about right. But actually, you're right. And I like the way you put it, stars. And we only have a few superstars.
Right, Right.
I think they're superstars, and they might get paid like superstars, but you're not a superstar, you know? And so LeBron's in that category, Steph Curry's in that category, Kevin Durant's in that category. And then the rest of them are stars, and then 400 role players.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to get into all of that with you, your NBA career. I want to ask you one more thing about draft night, because you went into the draft media interviews wearing a Chicago Bulls hat, and you came out wearing a Seattle Sonics hat. Did you have any inkling that a trade was going to be talked about, or did that take you by complete surprise?
Well, it definitely took me by surprise. Now, here's what happened, and it's so funny. Now, back then, I didn't realize that. So when Commissioner Stern stood up there and said with the fifth pick, if you hammer, right, I'm sitting up like I'm getting ready to come up because I worked out for Seattle and they were like, we're picking you. You are coming to Seattle. I'm like, oh, my dream's coming true. I'm going to Seattle because that's where I wanted to go. Then all of a sudden, I Scott Pippen. I was like, who the hell is Scott Pippen? Okay. Something happened. I look back at my agent. He's telling me, you know, it's okay. Relax. It's okay. Eighth pick, I get drafted. I'm all elated again. Well, find out later on is this. Sacramento with the sixth pick was going to pick Scotty. And Chicago won it. Krause made the deal the night before. And so, you know, we'll pick Scotty with the fifth pick. You pick Olden. And then we switch. And again, the business of basketball. I was like, well, it's the worst trade ever. That I'm like, well, it all depends on how you look at it. I had a long career. So I was very happy with my career. Play with Michael Jordan and win championships, of course. But who's to say I was going to end up doing the same thing? We don't know. I could have been there for 1 or 2 years, whatever it was. So that's why I don't like playing the if game. But, yeah, but that deal was the night before.
Yeah, but it pointed out to you right off the bat that you were in a business.
Of course. I was like, wait a minute. Chicago Bulls had that. We have a trade to announce. And I was like, a trade? Who got traded?
Wow. All right. Now, let me take you back to childhood, man, because self-disclosure, my son James, who now works for the Orlando Magic, he spent 4 summers in Haiti after the earthquake with Oklahoma athletes. And we actually adopted, you know, quote unquote adopted and supported some of those young people in those orphanages. So it's cool. It's really cool. But you were born in a country. I think you were born in the capital, right? Were you born in Port-au-Prince?
I was born in Port-au-Prince, yes.
Okay. And I didn't notice about you. You were lucky. You're lucky to be walking today.
Yes.
You were born with physical deformities. Mm-hmm. That had to do with your feet, and you were really never supposed to walk. And do you remember those early days as a 2 and 3 year old?
I remember my mom and dad rubbing oil on my leg. I do remember that. And I remember not being able to like walk around, like specific things like that. And I remember the big old cast I had on both my feet. And coming from Haiti, it's funny when I look at it as a grown up, and then finding out where I came from, the country and the poverty and everything else, I'm like, oh my God, I am. And I'm proud to say that because that's medical, you know, system in Haiti. NBA basketball was the furthest thing from my mind.
Yeah, your dad used to carry you, your family couldn't afford a wheelchair. So the way I heard it, he carried you around when you were a young child.
He would carry me around, like, you know, because you're right, we couldn't afford any of that stuff. And so, again, those are the memories that I value, is like having parents that really took care of me, the rubbing of the oil on my legs to massage them and keep them going. Man, that's why everything I did was for my family, you know, because it's unheard of, you know, for something like that to happen and for me to be able to walk.
So let me ask you this, because I know a little bit about the history of the country. When your family emigrated to the United States, was it because of the dictatorship? Were they refugees, or they just saw a better life in America? How did that work out?
My grandfather wanted, he had come to the U.S. once before, and he's like, it's an amazing country, land of opportunity, you know, the basic spiel. And my dad was kind of an activist, you know, against government. So the best time for him to be there. So it was like twofold. And so, you know, he decided, hey, I'm going to get my family out of here. And he came to the U.S. in 1970 and worked his butt off, saved money, and sent for my mom in 19—my dad came in 68, my mom came in 70. And then they worked, and then we came in 72.
You came as a seven-year-old, right? Seven or eight?
Right before my birthday, which wow. is 5 days, four, three wow. days.
That's good, man. Happy birthday. And you're in a great spot to celebrate your birthday in Maui. Yeah, exactly. Do you, you know, like as a New Yorker, as a guy that grew up in the city, I got incredible memories of childhood in New York, even though we didn't have any money. What do you remember about being in New York City, in your neighborhood when you first got here, like the difference between where you came from and then just what you were thrown into?
That's a great question. And it's like what you said about not having any money. I was already used to not having money. So, but when I came to the U.S., it's crazy. I remember getting on the plane and walking off. And I left. I grabbed my brother and my sister and I started walking. And all I did was follow the pictures of the suitcases. I didn't know where I was going. I'm in New York City, Newark Airport. And I'm like, wait a minute. Okay. So I'm walking, and then I see my mom and dad running towards us. And I was like, all right. Then when we were driving into New York City, seeing those giant buildings, as I call them, incredible. You know, the Empire State Building, you know, getting up and seeing the bridges. I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
But the funniest and most memorable for me was going into the hotel. We were staying at the Midway Hotel on 100th Street and Broadway. And it was having indoor plumbing.
Right. Right. Wow. Wow. That's funny. Did you see last spring Dominican Dream, the 30 for 30 on Felipe Lopez?
Yes, I did.
It sounds like what you're telling me, you know, Felipe and the family and seeing all the buildings and like yours is a basketball story. His is a basketball story, but it's really a story of immigration.
Yes.
And coming to a place, a land of opportunity, if you will.
Of course. And that's it. And we had the opportunity and we made the most of it. You know, I grinded it out. You know, I picked up a basketball at 16 years old. And so, but that was the opportunity. And that was the opportunity to go to college. I make the MBA. I just wanted a free education.
Yeah. Well, now your mom and dad were pretty, from what I understand, they were pretty strict with you, right? It was either.
All of us.
How did you, were you a pretty big kid as a 10, 11-year-old? I mean, did people see you and?
No, not at all. No, I was short, got beat up and robbed every day. Yeah. until the summer of my, between my freshman and sophomore year, I grew 6+ inches. And all of a sudden, Mr. Carey was like, hey, you know, he saw me in the hallway the following year. Like, are you going to try out for the basketball team? I was like, basketball? I don't even play basketball. He's like, really? And I was like, yeah. He's like, well, come try out anyway. And I'm like,
wow.
Me, I was the tallest. And then there was this other kid named Julian Ayala. He was 6'8", didn't play basketball either. We're the two tallest kids damn near in New York City.
Yeah, yeah. So you were at All Hallows and you weren't even a basketball player then?
No.
Wow. And so you go out for the team, and how was that acclimation? Now we talked earlier. I know your coach extremely well. He was a tough man to play for, but a big heart, right?
Already know, and you already know what I'm gonna say.
I know.
I was like, who is this crazy dude?
Yeah.
And screaming, I'm like, man, I'm not used to all this stuff, you know. And he's throwing the ball at me, and I'm, you know, I grew up with a soccer background. I'm like, you don't touch the ball in soccer. He's like, you got to catch it with my hands. Like, yeah, I'm jamming my fingers and all that. But you know what I liked about Mr. Carey, that he even though he was, you know, that type of person, he was taking the time to teach me, you know, but he was teaching me life lessons. And I think that's what I got most out of it than anything, you know, about not can't do something. Oh, it's too hard. Those were the things I remember most because he made that a part of the training.
Wow. Did you, once you got to be, as you started to improve, did you then really fall in love with the game? I mean, how did that process work? Because you got good, obviously, good enough to go to college, but how did that process work?
I got good really fast, Coach. And yeah. Even with my sons now, I get frustrated with them, but I'm like, well, I'm an anomaly, yeah. to brag, but I am, yeah. to pick up the game so late. And the following year, I'm an All-American.
Right, right, yeah.
I had 200 schools offering me scholarships. It was a lot. Again, Mr. Carey being there, pushing me every day. But it was a rough process because I had to learn everything. But the good thing is I didn't have any bad habits. Drop stepping, pick up the ball, chesting the ball. And it's just all these little nuances of the game that I picked up early on. So I didn't have any bad habits to fall back on.
How much, what was your personality like? I'm curious. I know a lot of kids come from the Caribbean. They're laid back, Were you a laid back person? And I have a reason for asking.
I was very shy.
Yeah.
Very insecure.
Yeah.
Oh, especially when I, with the accent that I had, how kids are, they make fun
yeah.
of you.
Yeah.
And it's almost to the point where, I didn't want to say anything to anybody because I knew the minute I opened my mouth, they were going to start laughing.
Right, and right.
I became this quiet kid. But then as I got the confidence in basketball,
yeah,
put my name in the paper. I remember Peter Vesey, right. I was like, all right now.
Yeah. Here's why I ask, because you played in an era like, New York City Catholic League basketball is, and when you played, that was an era where every game you played in the Catholic League was somebody else was a star. How did your personality develop as you got better with the game and seeing your name in the paper and getting colleges to recruit you? How did your personality evolve?
It kept growing. I got more and more confidence. And then it was like, I averaged a few points here and there. My junior year, I'm averaging about 17. Big leap. I'm picking up a basketball to playing in that league. And I didn't even realize the enormity of CHSAA basketball. It's for other kids. But it was like, dude, do you realize that's Kenny Smith right there? That's Tom Sheen. That's Bruce Dalrymple. That's Tommy Hammaker. I'm like, wait a minute. These guys are all Americans. And I'm like, oh, my God. Pearl Washington, Walter Berry, going up against them.
Yeah, this was your era.
Amazing, playing against these guys. And the funny thing about it, Coach, we moved to the Polo Grounds. And I lived right across the street from Rucker Park.
Yeah.
And still didn't play basketball.
Wow.
Until high school.
Yeah. Wow. So did you ever walk by the Rucker Park and wonder what was going on?
I could see the games from the window. I could literally see the park from my neighbor's window and watch it. We go out there. I would be playing baseball or stickball, and then all the commotion, then the park gets filled up. There's nowhere to be. People sitting in the trees. I remember when Dr. J showed up. I remember all that stuff. Joe Hammond, playing basketball there. So it was like, it was basketball heaven. But again, I didn't know anything about it. But once I picked basketball, I was like, I'm going to come out here in my neighborhood and show them what I got. And again, to your question about the confidence, it kept building and building. Playing against those guys made me better for CHSAA basketball.
Right. So you end up at Virginia, and I figure all this out because years later, I know how close of friends Coach Carey and Jim Larranaga are.
Yes, sir.
They grew up in the same neighborhood. Parkchester, maybe, in the Bronx. And so when I saw that you went to Virginia, I said, okay, what's the connection? So now you went there at an interesting time because really you were the guy that replaced Ralph Sampson.
Yes.
You were a freshman, 6'11", whatever, going to Virginia and you're replacing Ralph Sampson. And I'm just curious, like, by this time you've built the confidence up, you're an All-American, you're obviously a bright guy. Why did you pick Virginia other than the obvious that I know that probably Coach Carey was saying, Olden, listen, they'll take care of you. I know.
It was obvious. I wanted to where I knew somebody.
Okay.
Coach Carey were best of friends. And I was like, I have a connection. So I didn't want to break that connection. You know, if anything's wrong, I can always reach back and say, hey, Coach Carey, can you talk to Coach Latinaga, please? You know, and so I had all those other schools. Eldon Miller came to recruit me, you know. Well, we had 55,000 students at Ohio State. I was like, oh, never mind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Plus, Ralph Sampson showed me a great time doing my recruiting visit.
There you go. There you go. That never hurts. That never hurts. Well, and plus, they were in the limelight. They were in the limelight, right? Because of Ralph. He was three-time National Player of the Year. People forget how great he was.
But, Coach, you know what's so funny? You're right. Ralph was a tremendous guy, three-time National Player of the Year, and very daunting meeting him, you know. But I remember my recruiting visit, and again, goes to show you, business, business, business. But they had all these beautiful women and, you know, all boys school.
Right, and, right.
Okay. I'm at my recruiting visit, beautiful women everywhere from D.C., Maryland, everywhere. And I'm like, oh, I'm coming here. I signed up to go to Virginia. I get there in the fall. None of those girls are there.
Yeah, that's pretty slick. I've done those kind of things as a coach. So now, listen, I remember I looked at your roster. And all those guys I remember watching, you know, Jimmy Miller, Tim Merrifield, of course, Rick Carlisle, people don't realize was a transfer from Maine.
Yes.
Your teammate who's now a great coach in the NBA, and you competed against him in the NBA. Your freshman year was up and down as a team.
Yes.
You guys, yeah. I think you guys were 6-8 in the ACC, weren't sure you were getting in to the NCAA tournament, and you do get in, and you go to the Final Four. and by the way, that was Seattle. Was that your first time in Seattle? It had to be, right?
Yeah, you got to remember, I didn't do a lot of traveling. Once right. I got there, that's when all the traveling started. I was seeing all these great cities and states. But I get to Seattle. But let's go back a little bit. You're right. We had a very up-and-down year, and God, I cannot remember his name at the moment, who was our athletic director.
Schultz. There it is. Dick Schultz. Yeah.
Dick Schultz. So he's the head, you know, he's part of the committee. So that's the reason we got in. I was like, whatever. Once we got in, we had a team meeting. And it's so funny because we used to do this with the famed doctor, Robert Rotella. He would do the meditation thing. I was like the only guy that actually gravitated to it. Everybody thought it was, you know, they fell asleep. You could hear people snoring when we were doing it. So on the tournament, we started amping that up, and I really got into it. And like a light switch went on inside of me. But the funny thing about it, you know, our first round game was against Arkansas, Joe Klein. And I'm holy Christmas. I got out of here, you know. I'm 6'11". I only weigh about 195, 200 at the time.
Right, right.
Oh, my goodness. That is that's a building.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we go on and we beat Iona. And everybody's like, uh-oh, what's going on here? And who do we play next? Was it Syracuse? I can't remember who we played. And then the final game was Indiana. With Uwe Blob, another big center that was tough. So I was playing against all these top-notch guys who ended up in the NBA. And I'm a freshman, you know, they're supposed to eat me alive, but that wasn't happening. And so it was that road to the Final Four was incredible. And then we get to the Final Four, and I'm like, wait a minute, we're in Seattle. I got to go up against Akeem. It's the rematch, you know, because earlier in the year we had played them, and he infamously elbowed me in the throat because I was frustrating him.
Right. So now let me ask you, was that in the first game he elbowed you?
Yes, in the first game on purpose in Houston. Yeah. Just crack me running down the court.
Did you ever mention that to him in all the years that you – I think you mentioned to him after you retired, right?
When we retired, we ran into each other in Houston. And, buddy, he's like – he said to me, I always thought you were going to get me back. Said, that's what I wanted you to think. Because I just wanted you to always think, when is it coming?
Right. What was the Final Four like back then? Was it that was the beginning of the hype, right? I mean, Michael Jordan at 82, 80, then 83 was 83 was Albuquerque in the arena. But did you play in the big dome, the King Dome?
The King Dome. We played in the King Dome, that cavernous building. But Seattle was beautiful. Again, not been out that far before. And I tell the story. I remember we had a dinner. And I ordered shrimp. Now, Coach, you know, we grew up, so shrimp is a different taste than it is out west. And so they, and I'm eating it. I'm like, this shrimp tastes funny. They're like, yeah, that's because it's fresh. Boxed up.
Yeah. After you got to Seattle, did you take a liking to fish? You must have, right? But fish was part of Haitian.
It's one of my favorite cities. I love Seattle. And that's the thing. I likened to Seattle during the Final Four. And I said to a reporter, I'm going to come back and play here. I read that to him. And then the whole draft thing came. That's why I was like so distraught at first, because I'm like, wait a minute. The team that I want to play for wants to draft me. And again, when they said Scott Pippen, I was like, oh, no, go, man.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. All right, now let's talk about this. You go to Seattle. Who were the veterans up there? Because you did have – I mean, there were some dudes up there. Nate McMillan was a young player.
L. Ellis, Xavier McDaniel, Tom, Clement Johnson, Alton Kevin Williams. You know,
wow. Williams. from St. John's, he was crazy.
From <a kid's>
Charles Evans Hughes High School in Manhattan.
Great.
Yeah, I remember Kevin. Yep, he was a character. But hey, I got to ask you this about Virginia, but you because I forgot to ask you this, but when you played in the ACC during your time, I mean that's Michael Jordan, that's Sam.
Sam Perkins, Michael Jordan, Len Bias, Muggsy, my goodness, everybody had Duke had Allery, Amaker, Dawkins, Billis, Yoga.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
I have to admit, Jay Billis scared me.
Really?
Biggest steroidal arms I had ever seen.
That's funny, man. Wow.
I used to be scared of Jay.
he comes off now as pretty soft-spoken, obviously highly intelligent.
He was huge, Coach.
Yeah.
he had the biggest arms. Like, his arms were the size of my legs.
Yeah, yeah,
and it was
wow.
Such an intimidating thing to see.
Yeah.
You know, going to Cameron with the crazies, it's like, oh, Lord.
Yeah. Did all that, you know, CHSAA, ACC, and now you're off to the NBA, you had to have, and being picked as high as you were picked, you had to have confidence, right, that you were going to be able to play in the NBA after all the experiences in basketball, even though they came in a short period of time.
It came in a short period of time, but it was so new to me. Again, I was still in my infancy. You know? 3 years at Virginia, that's 6 years of basketball. And so, again, I'm still growing as a basketball player. I mean, I know kids, they start playing at 5, 6 years old. And so, yes. And so it was, I think my confidence actually started growing the summer of my senior year because I played with the Riverside Church Hawks. Doing that with all the greats in one place, seeing how they work, how they train, I think that started to help me a lot more. Because when I got to Virginia, it was like, okay, I had the confidence, but again, NBA was not in the thought process. You know, like, hey, I'm still getting better. I'm growing as a player. Then all of a sudden I hear something about, oh my God, he has a chance to make it to the NBA. I was like, who are they talking about?
Yeah, yeah. It's far, that would have been, that'd be a foreign language to you when you just a few years earlier, I would think.
And the next, I'm in the NBA. It's like three years of high school, 3 years in Virginia, you know, 1 year in Italy, and then boom, draft pick, the eighth in the draft. That's absurd.
Yeah. Let me change subjects, because this is, we're at a unique time in the country. And you played for the LA Clippers, and we all know about Donald Sterling. And I remember reading something about you all kind of knew his MO, even as players. How difficult, here you are getting paid, you're leading an idyllic life, you're a star, you're a celebrity. How difficult is it to be in an NBA locker room and knowing that the owner feels that, what, that's his mindset about human beings?
Well, it was rough for me because I tried to go into it with an open mind, be optimistic, you know. I tried to treat, so I didn't know anything about Mr. Sterling. So I'm like, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt until he proves me otherwise. You know, on the other team, you have to give the respect as far as that. So I still remember the situation. So I get traded from Seattle to the Clippers and fly in, and we play a game. My first game, I don't think he shows up. The second game, he comes into the locker room. But here's the thing I didn't know at the time. I'm watching all my teammates run to the back, you know, shot. Anyone, whatever else. I'm like, why they leave it? It was a mass exodus. Like, literally, you watch 12 guys just run out at the same time when the door opened. Still sitting there. I'm like, okay, oh, this Donald Sterling. He walks in with two other gentlemen. And I'm looking around. I'm the only one in the locker room. Puts his hand on my shoulder. He goes, look at this buck right here. Look at this. Look at all these muscles. But he used the word buck. And I'm like, what the hell did he just say to me? So I'm there with a smile because, I don't want to be disrespectful because I really want to lash out, but I'm not. Okay, he's just rubbing on me. And I look over and I see all the guys, all you see are eyes. You see all the eyes. And they all laughing. And I'm like, oh, they set me up. They knew who this guy was, you know. But the fact that he was, like, touching on me like that and made that statement, I was like, you know what? You stay in your lane, I'm going to stay in my lane.
Yeah, yeah. So when 2014 happens, this is no surprise. Like, you almost said, like, the fact that he had these tendencies, let's face it, racist tendencies, that this was long part of his MO, but it really manifests itself in a major way in 14. We had the, you know, the incidents, let's just say.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah.
But what's so funny, Coach, it's, I don't want to say he's an outright racist, you know, but I personally, and I don't want to make excuses for him, I just think he doesn't realize it or that it's wrong. He grew up and everything else, because he comes from not a rich background. He comes from a poor background. Didn't know better. And it's, he's gotten to the point where it's like, I do what I want to do. He has, you know, all these, you know, sexual assault allegations and cases that he's settled for. And it's just like, I think he just functions as a billionaire. Like, I can do what I do. So I think it's bad than outright racism. Personally. And I could.
Yeah. Given your thoughtfulness about a lot of things, you know, that you've experienced in your life, what did you think of the NBA players this summer in the bubble and the way they handled their activism?
Well, I thought it was great, but I really, personally, I thought they should have just canceled the season. You know, if you make an impact, that was the time to do it. Just say, you know what, once it, because COVID, what COVID did is what I wanted guys like NBA, NFL, all the athletes to do prior to COVID. If you want change, you have to shut down sports. You know, but COVID did that for us. So it was like, oh boy, there goes the ace in the hole. Every opportunity to do it. And they chose to play. And again, messages get lost during play. You know, we're so focused on the game. We're not hearing the message. But again, I applaud them for what they did, for being able to be in there for 3+ months, you know, family and friends and everything else, and normalcy. I thought it was a great experiment.
Yeah. We were watching day to day, just seeing how the players would react to being away from home, bubble, testing, competing, George Floyd. The whole thing was like thrown into one blender.
Yes.
And
seeing all these guys, and then, you know, their routine was taken away from them, and a different one was created for them. And I still remember like the whole situation with Daniel House, you know, the Houston Rockets.
Yeah.
And some people cannot function like that. So they got to go out and party and do their thing to play well. Yeah. And so I remember when I played, I liked going out to a club.
Yeah.
And then coming back, you know, going to sleep and all that. But it's like I needed to go out sometimes, you know, because I had so much nervous energy sitting in the room. Drive me crazy.
Right.
You know,
right.
I was going to come back. Okay, cool. I'm ready. To, you know, I'm ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Now this is okay. So you are at one point, and maybe still, one of the most famous Haitian athletes ever, and represent your country in a way that you've been a goodwill ambassador for the country. The first question I have is, how is the country doing? We're 10 years from the earthquake. I know the devastation and the poverty was already there. How is the country coming along, and how has the support been for the country as a whole as they, for lack of a better term, dig out from this natural disaster?
Yeah, we've still been digging out, and then COVID hit and gave us a different animal to fight.
Right.
And so it's a slow process for Haiti. It's been that way. I mean, we were still recovering. 10 years later, we were still recovering from the earthquake.
Right, right.
Few buildings had gone back up. And so, but the thing about Haitians is our resiliency. And right. So we're so used to it that when disasters happen, it's like, okay, well, let's pick everything up and start over.
Yeah.
And that's where we are now. You know, we had the new president was, you know, what, 2 years ago. And so it's, again, we still have a lot of problems politically.
Right.
And we get that straightened out. My country is always going to be that way. It's going to be in disarray.
Right, right. When back in 93, when we had the Haitian refugee crisis, refugees were put in Guantanamo Bay,
yes.
Which now became famous after 9/11, obviously. And you spoke out. You not only spoke out about the lack of help for the Haitian refugees, but you went on a hunger strike during the season. And you're a big guy. You look like you like eating those shrimp now. What do you remember about that?
I remember watching, and it's funny because I was at home getting ready for the game.
Yeah.
The news come on, and I'm watching Danny Glover, Harry Belafonte, all these famous Richard Dreyfuss, all these famous Hollywood people getting arrested, you know, for Haiti. You know, and I said, wait a minute. These people are doing this for my country. I got to do something. So I didn't know what I was going to do, but I got to do something. So I got to the arena, literally walked in the arena. The reporters come up and they ask me about the game. It's a basic basketball question. And I said, and I made the statement, you know, I am going on a hunger strike to protest the U.S. policies against Haitian refugees. And that was it. And everybody's like, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
The words came out of my mouth. I didn't plan them. I didn't predetermine. It's just, it happened. And so once I said it, I was locked in. And So, and then I went, started the hunger strike, no food. Then I would do, and then I did just liquids. Because I was allowed to do, they said you could do, you know, food. I talked to the team and everything else afterwards, after I made my announcement. Well, you got to be able to play during the season. I say, okay, well, I will eat something before a game. And so it was kind of like a Taylor type thing. Then Fire said, you know what? No, that's not a true hunger strike. And I said, get it. I'm just going straight liquids. And I did. So there were two games that I played, one against Shaquille, one in my, and I'm like, I barely could stand up.
wow. How did you end the strike? And then what was the reaction? What was the general reaction of people who cared about Haiti? Let's put it that way.
Okay. I'd like to talk about the people that could, they were so impressed. And I went all the way up to Congress and met with, we made changes. They least a bunch of the refugees. And so that was the goal. We got to get them out. And so it was amazing having those people. But I also had, and you got to remember, this is before social media. And so everything that I was hearing was firsthand. You know, before a game, you know, I'd have a guy walk by me, "Are you hungry?" You know, and I'm like, serious? That's what you say to me? What, for what I'm, it hurt me a lot, because I was like, I'm doing something positive here, and all these guys, NBA brethren, were like just really being mean. And so that was rough. But again, I got it done. But All-Star Weekend came up, which was great. I had 3 days to think about this. And my parents were visiting from Houston, and I passed out. And so my mom was like, okay, you gotta put this to bed. And that's when I ended, like, the second day of the All-Star break, I ended the lockout. And I did the hunger strike. And I was like, I went to eat, which was so funny. I went to eat, right? Couldn't even eat.
Wow.
like $300 worth of food at this restaurant. Couldn't even eat. So I just ate a bowl of soup and had some saltine crackers. That was all I could stomach. Making me nauseous. And I lost like 10 pounds of muscle. You know, not that I had a lot to lose, but I lost.
But you were a big guy. You were a big guy.
I would not trade that for anything in the world. It was a great moment for me, a great experience. And I did what I set out to do, which was to help my people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wonderful, because of what your mom and dad, they brought you from a place that's your place, your Haitian heritage. They bring you to the United States, but you don't forget who you are.
Oh, never.
Left. Yeah, yeah. You've always been very charitable with your time and money when it comes to people with disabilities, Special Olympics. How much of that, obviously it has something to do with your family background, but just tell me why that just hits home with you.
My grandfather, he was the man that taught me all this stuff. You know, if you have somebody needs 50 cents, you give them 50 cents. It doesn't matter. You'll get it back tenfold. That was the mentality. And so I still remember him doing that. I saw it personally, him doing it, you know, giving somebody, you know, his last. But the next day, boom, he got some more money. And so he put that in all of us. And that's just how my family is. That's how we're raised. You know, do we have our problems and issues? Of course, all families do. But that key component has helped me over the years, because I do try to look for the good in everybody, you know, until they treat me differently. And then even then, I'll still give them a second chance. But, you know, you just got to help your fellow man. You know, change comes not as a group, but as an individual. You know, if all of us make the changes ourselves, then boom, next thing you know, it's a better place.
Yeah, no question, man. You know, I'm thinking of all your obstacles, right? Your feet when you're a baby coming to the United States. What are you most proud of at this point in your life? You've accomplished everything people would dream about accomplishing. You've been active away from the court. What are you most proudest of, given everything that you've been through?
My perseverance, you know, I think that's the key. One of the things that I've wanted to do, I've been doing, is coach. I've been coaching for 15 years. I get a leg in into the NBA. But at the same time, I don't stop. I keep going. I've taken every program that the NBA has to offer, you know, at every level, management, coaching, scouting, I've done them all. I'm going to keep going. I'll be 80 years old. I'm going to still keep going. Hopefully I get there. But, you know, it's perseverance. And that, again, comes from my upbringing, from my family, seeing my dad do it, see my mom do it. And that's what I'm most proud of. And I'm seeing my kids do it, my grandkids. My granddaughter was born with autism. You know, now she's talking.
Right, right.
Perseverance. You know, yeah. That Polynesians, man, that's what Polynesians mean. Polynesians means many victories. And I'm going to keep winning. So it doesn't matter what I'm most proud of. It's just the fact that I'm able to persevere and it trickles down to the rest of my family. I love that.
Yeah, that's wonderful, man. Listen, World of Basketball is this podcast. And we try to get people on from every corner of the globe. And to have someone from Haiti on, given all the stuff that that country's going through and given what you've represented, and of course I think of you as a New Yorker too, obviously, but we try to touch every corner of the world with this podcast, and you've brought our listeners to a little slice of Haiti, and we can't thank you enough, Holden.
Thank you so much. It's so funny, I used to say from Haiti to Harlem to Hollywood. Now, I can add Hawaii.
That's a book title right there, man. That's a book title. Hey, all the best. Stay safe. Enjoy the vacation. And we can't thank you enough.
Oh, thank you so much, Coach. It was really an honor and a pleasure to be on with you, man. You wanted the best. Thank you.
Thanks. Well, great stuff from my old friend and fellow New Yorker, Holden Polynes. Great stories. He's had a wonderful NBA career now helping, doing coaching. He's doing some coaching after his career. He's involved with disabilities. He's also a goodwill ambassador for his native country of Haiti. So a very thoughtful guy that I've known since he was a high school player. Thanks to Holden Polynes. And again, if you like what we're doing on World of Basketball, go ahead and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. You can find us at a variety of places, but when you subscribe, also feel free to give us a review. We love bringing you interesting people from this ever-shrinking basketball globe. And as always, you can bet that next week I will bring you to another place in my world of basketball.